Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm glad you stuck with us and we had a break last week because I've had the most tenacious bug that's hung on now for a couple of weeks. We're feeling better. We're raring to go. Today we'll be talking to Ramsey Sprague and Jacob George about the veterans project they have called Operation Awareness. Ramsey and Jacob, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you for having us, Cindy.
Oh, it's great to have. It's great to have multiple guests on, so thank you for joining us today. So first I want to hear about your stories and what led you to Operation Awareness before we actually talk about Operation Awareness. Ramsey Sprague, why don't you go first?
Well, actually, Jacob founded the bicycle ride, and I heard about it.
Why don't you tell us about your story, your personal story?
Well, I was doing relief work in New Orleans for the BP oil spill this summer and was spending some time with a friend who alerted me to Jacob's poetry book. My tribe is from that area, and I was checking on what was happening on with our bayou and the shoreline down there, Chittimacha Indian, and read the poetry book and was moved pretty much exactly what I'd want an Afghan veteran to be telling me. So I started arranging for them to visit Fort Worth, Texas, where I'm from.
Uh-huh.
And have been organizing there for many years.
And but tell me, like, what is your family history? I understand that you come from a military family.
Right. Well, I was raised by my grandparents. And my grandfather on my mother's side was a Vietnam veteran. He was actually a senior master sergeant in the Air Force, a career man. And he was disabled after running over a landmine in Vietnam. But he was further disabled by a cancer that he that his doctors attributed to exposure to Agent Orange during his service. And he passed away when I was six.
And how did this make you feel about military and the U.S.'s military misadventures?
Well, it gave me a really cynical, to be completely honest, a really cynical perspective about military service and what it actually brings to families, military families, and the kind of stress that it puts on military families. So I've always been naturally very empathetic towards other military families and the stress that they go through, and have been doing organizing out of that vein. I've been doing police organizing since I was in high school, first opposing the war in Kosovo and the military intervention in Kosovo, and then the military intervention in Afghanistan and then Iraq after that, and anywhere else I felt like it needed to be spoken out against. I think Liberia was on the table at one point, and but anyway, in Libya today, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're from Fort Worth. Did you ever come down to Camp Casey when we were camped out there?
Well, it's a funny story. I didn't get the chance to meet you at the Veterans for Peace National Convention that year.
Right.
But I was working there. I had a documentary film series in Fort Worth called Conscientious Projector.
Uh-huh.
And the organizers asked if I could present the late night documentary screenings at the conference. I was happy to do that.
Uh-huh.
And I was actually present at the plenary session in which you said you were going to go down to Crawford and ask George Bush directly for what noble cause your son died.
Right.
And I was very moved. And I was actually literally moving myself from apartment to apartment, and I didn't have internet access. And I wasn't in between jobs, but the restaurant I was working at was closed. So all my social circles were kind of closed.
Right.
For that very brief moment. And I missed it all.
Oh,
like a couple weeks later, several friends came back and they're like, "Where have you been? Why haven't you been down?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" It was a real shame, and I look back with a large amount of regret in that period.
Well, at least we've been in the same, you know, stratosphere before. Thank you for sharing your story, Ramsey Sprague. Jacob George, why don't you tell us, share with my listeners and me your story?
Well, I grew up in Arkansas, wound up joining the military October 2000. Long story short, I was a paratrooper. I was a sergeant when I got out. I wound up doing three tours in Operation Enduring Freedom. And I just got out and thought I'd go to college and try to have a normal life. Well, earlier last year, my little brother had received orders to go to Afghanistan when he was 19. Now, my first tour when I went to Afghanistan was when I was 19, and this is 9 years later.
Wow.
And there's a nine-year age gap between my brother and I, so there's a lot of eerie things that really lined up with this. So I've been riding bicycles a lot. I actually worked for the University of Arkansas on bicycle, and I wanted to take off for a while, and you know, we talked about a lot of things, and I told him some stories about my experiences that I never shared with him to put some things into perspective for him, and he decided to go AWOL and protest the war instead of going to Afghanistan. He joined us on the bike ride and rode with us across Arkansas down to New Orleans to help with the cleanup effort. And then over to Houston and went back, and they chaptered him out with a general discharge with honorable intent without a single day in jail, which was very surprising to us because the entire strategy was to get him thrown in prison or kicked out of the military, just not sent to Afghanistan. And at every media outlet we stopped at, we were like, hey, he's AWOL, you know. And Jordan was like, come and get me. You know, I'm not going to Afghanistan. What are you going to do about it? And they didn't do anything but quietly get rid of them. So that says a lot. After that, more people started taking interest in the bike ride. And around that same time, the Iraq and Afghan war logs were released. So people started taking what we were saying a little bit more seriously, given it was just legitimized. So ever since then, we've been riding.
And you're talking about the WikiLeaks exposure about the Afghan and Iraq war logs?
That's correct.
And before we go into that, because I do want to talk about that, when Ramsey said that your book of poetry inspired him, what exactly is he talking about?
Well, I had, be perfectly honest, when I got out of the Army, I did a lot of drinking and homeless for a year or two, trying to put my life back together. A lot of things really didn't make sense. I was really frustrated with what I experienced. I didn't know how to articulate that until I went to college. And I started taking writing classes and all kinds of other classes. And it really changed my worldview, and it gave me the ability to articulate my frustrations. And a lot of that came out in my poetry. So when we were getting ready to put the bike ride together, we needed a way to kind of pay for what we were doing while we were on the road. Uh-huh. So I assembled some poetry that I had in a little booklet about my experiences, and it's kind of a little zine. It's not even really a book. It's just like 18 poems. That's what we were handing out on the road. It has a little kind of a manifesto in it about what we're up to, and it's kind of an outreach tool for us as well, as you can see.
So tell us about Operation Awareness.
Well, this was kind of birthed out of the idea that the average U.S. citizen is simply not aware of what's happening in Iraq or Afghanistan, or just simply across the board with U.S. Foreign policy altogether. We, as a collective of veterans and artists, had decided to challenge the narrative of war, really. That was the whole idea, really, was to get on bicycles and to ride around the American South, because we see that as the hub of war culture, and to really talk to people about what this war is and what war really is and about our culture of war.
Ramsey, did you join Jacob on the bike ride?
I did. I joined in August. Jacob and, at that time, another Afghan Air Force veteran named Spencer Hindmarsh was on the ride, and they came to Fort Worth, and I asked if I could join after we had had a very successful
a series of events and media interviews and everything in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area.
Well, what were I want to talk to both of you about your experiences, but Ramsey, why don't you go first? What kind of positive and or negative experiences did you have when you were out riding around and talking to people about the wars and the effect of wars on families and the veterans?
Well, it's all been extraordinarily positive.
Mm-hmm.
I can really only point to perhaps one or two experiences that were even vaguely negative, but weren't, you know, the individuals were disapproving of what we were doing, but they weren't violent, and the discourse was, it was positive on the whole. I mean, really, the beauty, I guess the best part of it for me is to be able to meet and get an intimate perspective on the lives of other military families, and exactly hearing their, you know, they hear about us and what we're doing, or just mention that we're a collective of veterans and artists and we're writing. You know, they just immediately resonate and open up, and we've heard some really incredible stories. There have been several individual veterans as well that have told us some really outrageous stories of the, you know, five tours type of
right.
Just incredible. So really those are the best for me. That's the kind of things that keep me moving and keep me oriented towards this type of work.
Well, what's amazing to me is that, you know, even though the wars, especially since World War II, have been all, well, you know, I don't think that any war is right, but, you know, especially since World War II, it seems like the military-industrial complex has grown, and, you know, there's lies and exploitation and everything to keep us in these wars and get us in these wars. But it's amazing to me how many people are still hanging on to the myth that, you know, the U.S. is a force for good around the world, and if we are in a war and if we're killing innocent people, then, you know, we're doing it for very good intentions. And the only time that I personally have ever been attacked physically has been from a Vietnam vet wearing his Vietnam uniform. He came down, he was in his 60s, came down to an event I was doing and actually physically attacked me. So it's amazing after all the experiences to me that people are still in support of what we're doing. Jacob, did you come across any kind of negative experiences when you were on the road, or even your positive experiences are really good to share?
Well, I think the most negative experience we had absolutely nothing to do with the political ideas behind which we ride. I think it's a glaring example of the state that we're in this country right now, economically, especially in the South. But someone tried to rob us, tried to take our van and all our bicycles and all of that. But we made it out of that situation without anything negative happening. But that was by far the most negative thing that's happened so far. Now, I have to say the most positive thing that I've experienced on this thing was when my brother handed me his discharge papers.
That is very amazing. But do you think that happened so they wouldn't be able to expose the reasons for why he didn't want to go? Do you think that the high level of exposure of your ride and everything helped him get those discharge papers?
I'd have to say it's an assumption because neither of us really know, but my assumption would be it is yes. It was a highly politicized situation. The cards are kind of stacked in our favor, given that they put him in when he was 17 and sent him to basic training between 10th and 11th grade.
Wow.
Then he dropped out of high school when he went tried to go back to school. So there's a lot of things that really that didn't look good for them. So there was a lot of good reason to keep it quiet. But the fact is we asked his chain of command if he could get out once it was revealed that his unit was going to Afghanistan, and they denied that. So taking this type of political action obviously changed the tune of the song.
Well, I want to shift gears, and I'm going to ask this question of both of you if you want to give me some input. I was looking on your website, and there's a part of it that says, it's questions. It says, do you support war? Do you have a job? Do you pay taxes? And it says if you have a job and pay taxes, then you are supporting the war. And I'm just playing devil's advocate here because I haven't paid my taxes since my son was killed, and, you know, I don't have a job. But what do you tell people? Because I go, of course, around the country and I speak to people and I tell them that paying their taxes is actually supporting the war and supporting the war machine, but many people can't get out of that paradigm. They're so, even if they're peace activists, they're terrified of, you know, taking that step of not supporting the war financially. So what have been your experiences when you talk to people about that, and what can you tell my listeners about taking this principled step?
Well, I think that's a very intimate conviction, because it definitely didn't cross my mind not to pay taxes until I realized that my taxes were actually sending my brother to war. And that was the real paradigm shift for me. But, you know, there's plenty of people throughout history who have decided to take these type of stances, let's say Jesus Christ, for instance.
Right.
Which happens to be a revered figure here in the United States, also would make the same claims about where our tax dollars were going and what we're actually fueling with our money.
Well, that is one thing. That's definitely, I think most people who are listening to this show understand that. You know, they understand that there's a moral, what do you call it? There's like a moral tug of war in their hearts. It's like, I tell people, if Barack Obama walked up to you and said, write me a check for $3,000 so I can use it to torture people, would you give Barack Obama a check for $3,000 to torture people? And, you know, that's putting it, I think, in a little bit of a perspective. But to say that if you pay your taxes, you actually do support the war, how do you confront people by that?
No one wants to hear the truth, to be perfectly honest. And that's the truth of the matter. And a lot of the work that we do in the South doesn't really involve us revealing our position immediately. Like, we try to figure out where the other person's standing and just kind of listen to why they support the war, so we can figure out what the true root cause of this war culture is. So, like, the first thing out of my mouth really isn't, I'm not paying taxes anymore, and you shouldn't either. That's just a personal conviction I've taken on, and I was driven to that because of something very personal that happened. Unfortunately, the way that the war is compartmentalized and the information that is issued from it is compartmentalized, a lot of people don't have an intimate connection with the war.
Well, definitely. There surely isn't a shared sacrifice anymore, and Ramsey pointed that out, that, you know, many people have no idea what military families actually go through, because there's not very many people who are military families in this nation anymore. And we're not saying that I won't speak for you all. I'm not saying that I want everybody to be a military family. That's not the point. The point is that, yeah, the sacrifice of these wars have been taken out of the hands of, you know, a vast majority of people in this country.
It's true. Very true.
So, Ramsey, tell me about, since this is, you know, tax season, what are your thoughts about supporting the U.S. empire? And, you know, it's not just the wars that we support when we pay our taxes. I feel like we support a lot of negative things when we pay our taxes. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I agree with the sentiment wholeheartedly. I've been a longtime advocate of the Peace Tax Fund, and actually did organizing around that in my community many years back as a member of Peace Action in Fort Worth. I haven't personally taken it upon myself to do
tax resistance, but I don't think I'll be paying my taxes this year. So,
that's good though. Tell my listeners about the Peace Tax Fund and how they can get more information on that.
Well, I don't know the exact website off the top of my head, but the Peace Tax Fund is an initiative that's been introduced by a coalition of Quakers and Mennonite church leaders since, I believe, the 70s. And every congressional session, it gets reintroduced, and is simply a bill that advocates or that it would allow for an individual to not have their personal taxes go towards the Department of Defense.
Okay, I'll find that and I'll put that a link on my website too. Thank you. So, Jacob, have you been keeping up with what's going on with Bradley Manning? There's been some horrible developments in his case this week.
Yes, it's incredibly alarming. I don't know how much further this can go, but it's out of control right now.
And do you, this kind of goes back to your brother and your brother getting out of the military and me and the fact that I am a very vocal and, prominent person who is saying, no, I'm not paying my taxes. I don't fund the war. I won't pay your taxes. I'm like you. I wish the government would come after me so we could put these wars on trial. Why do you think that they're making Bradley Manning, who, in case my listeners don't know, my listeners are very smart and they're very aware of current events, but Bradley Manning is accused of leaking some of those WikiLeaks documents that we talked about earlier. Why do you think that they're making such an example of him and pressing charges that could actually lead to the death penalty?
Well, this is Jacob. This is probably the most significant act of GI resistance in the history of the United States.
Yes.
And in terms of creating transparency and just about anything else. And I think that has a lot to do with it because this is something that's actually quite simple to do. And if they do not set an example with Bradley Manning, there are plenty of other service members who are having this same moral or ethical conflict who would be likely to do the same exact thing if he actually gets away with it without getting killed or put in prison for the rest of his life. So I could see it being argued that this is an idea of national security. You know, we have to protect national security, or we have to keep national security in mind here in terms of making an example out of him. Because if we let him go, one, he's going to have a pretty powerful narrative to tell the U.S. people on how he's been tortured. We're coming up on almost a year now. And two, if other soldiers decide to start doing this exact same thing, it's going to create a lot of problems for the U.S. government, Department of Defense in particular, and how they want to treat the rest of the world.
Ramsey, as an organizer, what can we do to turn the tables on the empire and make this about their crimes and not about Bradley's, you know, principled stand?
Well, really, Bradley provides this incredible opportunity to the anti-war movement that we haven't really seen as clearly in the generation that these wars have been happening. Bradley Manning is an openly gay war-resisting soldier.
Right.
And he bridges the cultural divide between the LGBTQ rights movement and the peace and worldwide democratization movement that are happening. And it's incumbent upon us to lift him up as an example of moral righteousness, acting on his moral conscience and moral urgency, and exalt him like a hero that he is, or his actions for what they were, and build a culture that will support resisting soldiers, build a culture that will support people that will not go along with unlawful commands.
And we see the LGBTQ community, their major accomplishment or what their push was for was the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And so instead of, like, making Bradley Manning their hero and their example, they're celebrating something that would allow you know, lesbians, gays, transsexuals, bisexuals, to, you know, the queer community to participate openly in this empire.
Right. As a member of the LGBTQ rights movement and community, I don't see Donut Frontal as a as the best step forward. However, I do think that there's an incredible opportunity to appeal to reason to individuals who are in the military structure, or interested in the military structure, interested in advocating on behalf of gay soldiers and lesbian soldiers and transgender soldiers, as they were, to also advocate on their moral consciousness and their moral urgency, and to provide Bradley Manning's actions as a clear example of what to do if you see illegal acts happening and you can do something about it.
Jacob, have you made this bike ride also about counter-recruitment? Because I think the best way to stop these abuses is to stop people from actually joining the military.
Yes, we've actually made a handful of stops at high schools to speak specifically with students and have participated in counter-recruitment campaigns. And I see the same exact thing you see as well. This is, in order to change a culture of war, you have to make generational changes. It's not something that we can expect to happen overnight with simple policy. There has to be some type of shift in how we think and how we approach diplomacy and working with other countries, and that does start with the other generation. It starts with the next generation. We've already kind of messed that up, my generation has. But, you know, we have stories now that we can share to hopefully change how we deal with problems tomorrow.
Well, right on. Well, we're running out of time, guys. I'd like to thank you both for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox with a really informative show. Jacob, give my listeners your website and how people can get a hold of you.
Okay, our website is operationawareness.org. And on the front page of the website, we have an email that you can contact us through at a Gmail account, or you can communicate with us through the website if you're interested.
And Ramsey, what are the next steps?
Well, the next steps right now are we have a spring bicycle tour called the Bradley Manning, A Rebel with a Cause bicycle tour that will culminate in decentralized events happening all across the country. Right now we have 13 cities on board that are organizing to publicly display art exalting Bradley Manning, and we're calling that Bradley Manning Solidarity Weekend. That's the second weekend in April. You can find more information about that on our website as well.
Well, great, guys. Thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy.
That was Ramsey Sprague and Jacob George from Operation Awareness. I hope you go to the website. I hope you support their work. And if you can host an event, I hope you also consider doing that. Well, that was Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something. I hope you tune in again next week. And I'd like to thank, as always, my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, you for listening, and our guests, Ramsey and Jacob. This is Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Now, you mothers particularly, the only way you can resist all this war hysteria and the beating of tom-toms is by hanging on to the love you bear your boys. When you listen to some well-worded, well-delivered war speech, just remember that it's nothing but sound. It's your boy that matters. And no amount of sound can make up for the loss of your boy. After you've heard one of these speeches, and your blood is all hot and you want to go hit someone, go upstairs where your boy's asleep. Go into his room. You'll find him there. Pillows all messed up, covers all tangled, sleeping away so hard. Look at him. Put your hand on that spot at the back of his neck. The place you used to love to kiss when he was a boy. Just stroke it a little. You won't wake him up. He knows it's you. Just look at his strong, fine young body. Because only the best boys are chosen for war. Look at his splendid young creature who's a part of yourself. You brought him into the world. You cared for him. That boy relies on you. Now close your eyes and I'll tell you what can happen to him. Somewhere, thousands of miles away, dark, night, cold, all hell has broken loose. A bombshell burst into the air. Its unearthly flare lights up the sky. There's a lot of tangled, old, rusty, barbed wires out there, and somewhere a boy is hanging over them, his guts ripped out, his lips white, drawn, and he's feebly calling for help, for water, for his mother. He's in agony. There's your boy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Marine's hymn.